listening to Radio Arian at RadioArian.com.
Welcome to Arian Insights. Today's date is the 16th of January 2017 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Now today we have the welcome return of somebody who we interviewed last year on Arian Insights, a very well-known long-time nationalist who plays a large role in the Western Spring website. He's given quite a few speeches recently. He's become quite active talking at the London Forum, the Southwest Forum, and he also organised a leadership conference as well. So I'm very pleased to welcome back Max Musson from Western Spring today, and we're going to talk a little bit about leftist terrorism and the attack on the Southwest Forum, the Terrorism Act, all sorts of stuff that we've got in store for you today. But anyway, now I've introduced you, how are you doing today, Max?
I'm very well, thank you very much. It's good to be here and good to be speaking with you and speaking to all the listeners out there.
Thanks, Max. Yeah, as I say, you know, there's a lot of people that would like to hear more from you because, you know, whenever we do get to hear your input on things, it's always very articulate and well thought out. And I know you've got decades of experience in nationalism. So I suppose we should probably start off with, well, where do you want to start off? With the Terrorist Act banning of national action or the leftist attack on the forum the other week?
Well, let's actually start with the banning of national action, because I think that leads in very nicely to the things that I wanted to say about what happened last Saturday. And I posted an article on the Western Spring website a while back, which referred to the, well, which was about the murder of Joe Cox, and I pointed out that, in my opinion, the attack upon Joe Cox by Thomas Mayer wasn't, strictly speaking, an act of terrorism, because there was no intent on the part of Thomas Mayer to actually terrorize his victim. So, you know, he had never been in contact with his victim. He had never threatened his victim. In fact, he had never threatened anybody else. And so therefore, there was no intention, in my view, on his part to actually create terror. What he did, his attack upon Joe Cox was a very deplorable thing. I don't think any right-minded person would support what he did. It was a cowardly thing. I think whenever a man attacks a woman, it's a deplorable thing. I think for a man to attack an unarmed woman using a large knife and an improvised firearm is very, very regrettable, and certainly something that, as I say, any right-minded person would condemn. However, despite that, there wasn't the intention on his part to create terror. It was a politically motivated murder. And there's evidence that's been released since his trial, which indicates that he believed that the council house that he had lived in all of his life with his mother prior to her death, etc., that was going to be taken away from him, and that it was going to be used to house an immigrant family, because my understanding is that it was quite a large house, and therefore the view was that a single man living alone in a multiple bedroomed house wasn't an appropriate use of local authority housing, and so therefore that tends to suggest that his motive for attacking Joe Cox was possibly linked to his fear of losing his home rather than for political motives. The mass media have tried to portray him as a neo-Nazi and a white supremacist and all of this sort of thing. And whilst it is true that he did buy magazines and some books from a nationalist organization in the United States around about the turn of the century, so roughly 20 years ago. The fact of the matter is that his mother married a West Indian chap in the intervening period, and that Thomas Mayer had lived with his mother and had interacted with his half-brother, who would have then been of mixed race, throughout that 20-year period, and had shown no signs of having been an active nationalist or a racialist or a racist of any sort during that period. So therefore, my view is that Thomas Mayer's murder of Joe Cox was a politically motivated murder and not, strictly speaking, terrorism. As far as National Action are concerned, it was most regrettable that some individuals within that organisation took it upon themselves to make some statements over social media which rather sympathised with Thomas Mayer, and that gave the pretext under the Terrorism Act for the Home Secretary to ban them as an organisation that was encouraging terrorism. And the Terrorism Act is a very broad piece of legislation. It's virtually a catch-all piece of legislation in which, if the authorities want to, they can interpret virtually any act as an act of terrorism. And so therefore, what we need to do is to draw a distinction between what I describe as being primary acts of terrorism and what are actions that are perhaps just associated with terrorism. And so what I would say is that a primary act of terrorism is the use of violence against people or against property for political ends. And this, in fact, is the main definition of terrorism under the Terrorism Act 2000. The Terrorism Act 2000 then talks about further actions that are associated with terrorism and which can lead to organisations being banned. And these are things like funding terrorism or providing any kind of logistical support for terrorist groups or advocating on the behalf of terrorist groups. And so those kind of acts are peripheral to terrorism. And in my view, they are secondary actions. And really what most people understand as real terrorism are the primary acts of terrorism, i.e. attacking people and destroying property, etc., and that sort of thing. And certainly as far as National Action are concerned, they didn't engage in those primary acts of terrorism. They didn't try to terrorize their opponents, and they didn't employ violence against individuals in order to further their political aims, and they didn't employ violence, as far as I'm aware, against property. They didn't try to destroy property for political ends. And so if we then compare what the very broad use of the Terrorism Act 2000 in order to provide a pretext for the banning of National Action, if we compare that with the way in which that same legislation doesn't ever seem to be invoked in order to deter left-wing organisations from employing what I would regard as being primary acts of terrorism. Because ever since I've been an active nationalist, there has always been a constant threat of politically motivated violence from the extreme left. Whether that organisation was back in the day, it could have been the Anti-Nazi League or the Socialist Worker Party, or more recently, the anti-fascist and the anarchist organisations that currently exist. There has always been this constant threat of politically motivated violence. And as I say, under the Terrorism Act 2000, the use of violence against people or violence against property, the destruction of property, these are primary acts of terrorism. And clearly the attack that took place on the meeting of the Southwest Forum last Saturday was an attack against, it was a violent physical attack against people, and it was also a violent attack against the property, i.e. the fabric of the building in which we were meeting. And so That attack qualifies, in my view, as a primary act of terrorism, and therefore as a primary act rather than primary act of terrorism rather than as a secondary act of terrorism. It ought to be treated very, very seriously by the police, and the police should want to nip this kind of thing in the bud, because it will, if it remains unchecked, undoubtedly over a period of time lead to more and more extreme actions on the part of those people who want to employ terrorism.
Yeah, it's there's a lot to go into there. I mean, just with Thomas Mayer, where they were saying that this was a terrorist act, it was politically motivated. I'm not even sure it was, because he just said death to traitors, freedom to Britain. That was the only words that that he said. He didn't appear to have said anything concrete when he actually attacked Joe Cox. So it seemed to me that he really sort of handed that murder to the authorities to stamp on it whatever they wanted. They could have attributed to him whatever motive they wanted, because he never actually came out with a motive for what he did. And the fact that he mentioned traitors, death to traitors, freedom for Britain, we know that the government are traitors. I would like to see them taken to court and tried for their treason against our race and against our country. But I don't approve of extrajudicial execution, which is pretty much what this guy did. If that's why he did it, was because of her treason. And how many times have we heard people say, all that lot there in the Houses of Parliament, they should be lined up against a wall and shot, or so and so should be swinging from the lampposts. I mean, it's a very common saying to say about politicians, and it always has been for as far back as I can remember. People have said about these politicians that that's the sort of thing that should be done to them. So the fact that National Action sent out some tweets, okay, they were probably not, you know, I wouldn't have done anything like that. I doubt whether you would have done either, Max.
Probably
pretty tasteless, but to say that that's terrorism, you know, just words. I think it was, you know, very unfortunate they did that in the heat of the moment, because the government were then able to turn, you know, all their weapons onto National Action and make them out to be the enemy. They were the ones that it was their ideology that led to Joe Cox being killed, because it was them that voiced support for it. When we know that Thomas Mayer had nothing whatsoever to do with National Action, he had nothing whatsoever to do with any nationalist organisations, and as you just said just then, Max, which is something I was unaware of, he had a mixed race brother, and his mother was married to someone who wasn't white, which really, you know, I mean, that really sort of blows up their idea of, you know, this being racially motivated, him being a racist terrorist, you know, far right, killing Joe Cox. That seems to me to be a bit of a setup more than anything else. And to just give the establishment that on a plate to say, well, you can attribute whatever motive you like to me. I'm very suspicious of Thomas Mayer. And then to follow on from that, what you're saying about this this legislation, it's rather like using a sledgehammer to crack a walnut with. I mean, you've got National Action, who were, they weren't even an official grouping. They weren't an official organisation. They weren't a charity. They didn't have any of the infrastructure that the Terrorism Act is in place to dismantle, as it were. I mean, the effect of putting them on this terrorist bill has effectively meant that they're no longer a group, basically. You can't use the name National Action. Any of their propaganda can't be used. You can't really talk highly of them, because that could be glorifying them, but they no longer exist anymore. It seems to me that putting them on that terrorism list was basically just doing whatever this Jewish pressure group wanted, basically. Looking at the video that the Jewish pressure group put out before this happened, there were about 150 people that signed their petition really not a lot of people that in the country that were saying National Action should be banned as a terrorist organisation, and yet the government went straight ahead and did this. They used a sledgehammer to crack a walnut, and they banned an organisation, as you say, which had never been convicted of any violent crime to persons or property. So, and they were also the only British group ever to get put on that terrorism list. All the other groups on there are Islamic groups, and they are from elsewhere in the world. So it would seem to me that, you know, they were killing two birds with one stone with this. They were stopping National Action, and at the same time they were saying, we're not racist, we're not just putting all these groups on there because they're Islamic. We found a white terrorist group, never mind the fact they never actually committed any violent terrorist acts. All they did was send a couple of unfortunate tweets, but we're going to ban them anyway. So I'm not sure what message that's meant to send.
I think that last year it was fairly evident that David Cameron and Theresa May, prior to David Cameron stepping down, had they declared their intention to introduce special measures to disrupt the activities of people that they described as extremists who, whilst they weren't committing any criminal acts, were providing the justification, ideological justification for other people to perhaps commit acts of extremism. And it was evident to me there that the government were going down a very dangerous route, which is a route in which a route towards a totalitarian kind of society, really, because what they were saying was that even though some people we regard as extremists aren't actually breaking the law, we will still employ special measures to disrupt their activity. And I think that even though David Cameron stepped down and Theresa May has taken his place as Prime Minister, and we've now got Amber Rudd as the Home Secretary, I think that the government were looking for an opportunity to demonstrate their determination in this respect. And so they were really looking for a pretext to shut down nationalist organisation. And foolishly, National Action provided them with a pretext for doing that. But I think that prior to that, and as a preparation for that, the very deplorable and regrettable murder of Joe Cox by Thomas Mayer provided the establishment with an act that they could describe as terrorism, and as I've already explained, I think that it's the very broadest definition of terrorism has been employed there in order to designate that as terrorism, and that was described as terrorism just so that it would tarnish nationalist organisations, and as I say, provide a pretext in the event of statements of this sort that National Action made, for the government to shut down a nationalist organisation, and for Theresa May to appear to have fulfilled the promise made by David Cameron and her last year to disrupt organisations that they regard as extremist. But I think that the key thing that I want to talk about today, because I think that I don't think there's anything fruitful that can come out of further discussion of the murder of Joe Cox. But I think that the thing that I wanted to say today was that there is a need for government to seriously consider the use of the Terrorism Act 2000 far more widely in countering and preventing the kind of real primary acts of terrorism that are committed routinely and have been committed routinely over four decades, to my knowledge, where there are left-wing organisations that openly say that their intention is to smash nationalist organisations who parade through the streets with banners. I saw a photograph recently of some Antifa people. They may not have been in England, I think that they were in Australia, but an Antifa group parading with a banner saying the only good fascist is a dead fascist. And if you Google Antifa and then look at the images that come up. So if you do a Google image search, your computer screen will be filled with pages of Antifa and anarchist types of people engaged in acts of riotous violence against the police and also against their political victims. If you read anti-fascist websites, the websites are full of hate and full of discussion of the violent means that they are prepared to use in order to deny people who are regarded as their enemies any access to public spaces or to the streets or to any legitimate form of political expression. And so these people, these Antifa people, are agents of totalitarianism. They're terrorists. And part of the sad thing is that there are within the extreme left, there are lots of overlapping organizations, some of which are fairly short-lived, and they flare up for a while and become active for a period, and then they tend to die down and collapse, and then they are revived again, and they go under all sorts of, that there's any kind of sort of variety of permutations, using the word anti-fascist and anti-Nazi and socialist and all this kind of thing. But these organizations exist, and as I say, are violent organizations intent on acts of terrorism. And then around them is another circle of organizations that are perhaps less extreme, who organizations such as Unite Against Fascism, who provide a kind of moral justification for these extreme left-wing organizations. And so organizations like Unite Against Fascism are effectively a kind of chorus of applause for the primary terrorism that's committed by the more extreme left-wing anti-fascist organizations. And Unite Against Fascism, in that respect, are playing the same role that the government accused National Action of playing, of encouraging acts of violence against people who are regarded as their political enemies. And so, again, those people who support Unite Against Fascism should think again about what they're doing. What we need is for, you know, if the government want to be seen as being even-handed in their dealings with the issues that are confronting Britain today, then they certainly need to think again about the definition of terrorism and make the realization that the biggest threat in terms of terrorism to Britain today, well, the biggest threat comes from Islamic terrorism, and the most spectacular kind of terrorist events are likely to come from Islamic terrorism. But there is also this routine, lower grade terrorism, but terrorism nonetheless, and primary terrorism nonetheless, that is an ever-present threat from the extreme left.
And then there are other organisations, Hope Not Hate, Unite Against Fascism. They are the ones that are glorifying it. You know, this is extreme violence that they engage in. They call for it online. They threaten the people involved. Millennial Woes has had to leave the country due to the threat of violence from these left-wing organisations. They put a price on his head. They offered a reward for anyone that could identify him for the last year. They just seem to act with complete immunity from the law, Max. And I mean, this non-violent extremism, which they were trying to go after nationalists with, saying that we are non-violent extremists, we haven't actually broken the law, but they want to treat it as that anyway. And yet you've got the left wing that are actual ultra-violent extremists, who boast about their crimes, make blatant threats against people whose politics they disagree with, and they get cheered and applauded by these other organisations, the very organisations that the government appears to support. Wasn't David Cameron one of the benefactors of Hope Not Hate, and hasn't the main people behind Hope Not Hate, hasn't he just been knighted or something?
Yes, I think Nick Lowles of Hope Not Hate has been nominated for a knighthood, I believe. I've not actually looked into those details because, to be quite interested, I'm not really interested in him. And to what extent he's played a part in cheerleading for left-wing extremism. Again, that's not something that I really want to get into, but certainly Hope Not Hate and Searchlight have acted as a kind of an intelligence and black propaganda arm of the extreme left for many, many years. And there is certainly, in my view, no need and no justification for awarding knighthoods to any people who are involved in that kind of action, those kind of activities, which are essentially anti-democratic. I think as far as Hope Not Hate and Searchlight are concerned, they routinely defame and routinely slander people who are patriots, people who are nationalists, and they do so in a deplorable way. And this double standard on the part of the state with regard to terrorism is again reflected in other areas. For example, malicious communication. Malicious communication was the law against malicious communication was invoked last year against a nationalist for making or sending a tweet which the MP Luciana Berger found insulting, and yet people such as, or organisations such as Hope Not Hate and Searchlight are routinely allowed to make the same kind of slanderous statements against people who are nationalists, the same kind of highly offensive statements against nationalists, and again, no actions taken against them. And this again is reflected in the double standard that's existed for many, many years now, where the government, successive governments, have introduced anti-discrimination and equality-based legislation, the Race Relations Act and the Equalities Act, and these acts are introduced and they are very, very rarely ever invoked in support of indigenous British people who've been discriminated against or who've been disadvantaged, whereas they are routinely invoked in support of immigrants and people from the ethnic minorities. And so what we have here are three separate pieces of legislation, which are very, as I said earlier on about the Terrorism Act, very broadly based pieces of legislation, some of which it can be said have been specifically designed to almost to be catch-all kind of pieces of legislation. But these three pieces, these three areas in which legislation has been affected, anti-terrorism, anti-discrimination, and also anti-malicious communication, where those three pieces of legislation are routinely used against the indigenous British people, and in favour of ethnic minorities, and they're only ever in the vast majority of cases used in support of ethnic minorities. And you know that's something which is an iniquitous situation which any fair-minded government would take action to rectify. In terms of malicious communication, there have been articles published by Hope Not Hate that have featured me and who have tried to portray the work that we do within Western Spring in a way which is a travesty of the truth. And in this respect, I would specifically point to the way in which the Legion camps that we've organised have been portrayed. The Legion camps have been portrayed by the left and by Hope Not Hate as virtually as if they are paramilitary training camps, which is absolutely incorrect. Legion organization was set up partly in response to the continued and constant threat of politically motivated violence against nationalists. And we saw that there was a need for people who are nationalist activists to be able to defend themselves. And the fight training that forms a part of the Legion camps is designed specifically to enable people to defend themselves. There's no training that is given at these camps which has an offensive intent. It is all defensive. There's been references made to the fact that there was some training in countering knife attacks, which was then described as us giving people knife fighting training, as if we were training people to attack other people with knives, when in reality what we have actually done is we've trained nationalist activists to defend themselves when they are attacked by people with knives, which is the complete opposite of what has been portrayed by Hope Not Hate and by other similar organisations. As far as our activities are concerned, there is no attempt on our part to create any kind of paramilitary structure. There's no wearing of uniforms, there's no creation of military units or regiments or anything like that. No ranks are accorded to people. It's just simply self-defence classes of the kind that are often held in community halls and church halls all over the country on a routine basis, where there is a desire amongst the population to improve their ability to defend themselves. And Legion also serves two other functions. It's also a lifestyle club, and a very large proportion of the activities that we engage in during the camp weekends is to do with promoting a love of physical fitness, a love of outdoor pursuits, and this is aimed at countering the effete lifestyle that has tended to predominate amongst large sections of our young people in recent decades. The sort of lifestyle of clubbing and taking recreational drugs and the sort of sad pastime that lots of people seem to engage in nowadays of living virtual reality lives in front of their computer screens, playing all sorts of fantasy computer games and things of this sort, because their life otherwise is so dull and uninteresting. And what we hope to do, as I say, is to encourage a love of nature, a love of our indigenous culture, and to teach people life skills as well. And so these are skills that enable them to get on in life. Lots of young people have no training, no formal training when they're at school in interview skills. They have no formal training in things like public speaking. They have no formal training in CV writing or business development. And so we have sessions on these topics during the Legion weekends. And so the weekends are not even primarily about self-defense. Self-defense forms the part of what we do, but there are also these other functions. And a third function is to provide a network so that young nationalists can meet and network and make friends with other young nationalists, extend their influence and learn best practice when it comes to advocacy in our ethnic interests. And basically it's to that third function is to make them more effective advocates of the ethnic interests of the indigenous people of Britain. So there are those three functions. And it's interesting that Nick Lowles it's written the actual articles about me. It's another chap whose name escapes me for the moment. But in Hope Not Hate, they've as I say, tried to portray these camps as something which is very sinister. But in reality, I have been completely open about what we do at these camps. The location of the camps beforehand is always kept secret because, as I said before, there is this ever-present threat of terrorism on the part of the extreme left, and that's something that we want to avoid, and we don't want there to be fighting, and so we employ secrecy in making our arrangements, just as most nationalist political groups employ secrecy in making their arrangements, just purely so that we can avoid the confrontations that the violent left want to have with us. But I've, over the course of my time as an active nationalist, I've been approached by police officers. I've always assumed that they're a special branch, because I can't see why they would be taking an interest in political activity if they weren't. And these people, the last time I was interviewed by some police officers about my political activity, they asked me what we were up to with Legion, and I explained these three functions of Legion to them, and they accepted that they were legitimate and lawful reasons. And so as far as nationalists are concerned, who see what we're doing with Legion and who fear, and who also read what Hope Not Hate have to say about our camps, and who perhaps as a consequence of what Hope Not Hate write fear that they might be branded as terrorists or something of that sort as a result of attending the camps, they need have no fear of that, because there is nothing that we do on these camps that's illegal. And as I say, insofar as there is fight training at these camps, that fight training is all aimed at self-defense and not as anything offensive.
So it's basically doing all the things that young men should be taught at school, really. How to speak in public, how to defend yourself, all those things that you listed used to be taught in schools 30 or 40 years ago, and now it's all changed, and people have got empty lives, and something like those camps. I mean, I've spoken to some people that go to them, and you know, they form a large part of their lives. They very much look forward to going to them, and the camaraderie that's there, and what they learn there. All in all, they seem a very positive activity for young nationalists to get involved in. And the self-defense part, I think, is it's very sad, but it's absolutely necessary. These Antifa groups, these extreme left groups, they behave like street gangs. You know, they will think nothing of ganging up 10 of them on one person by surprise with weapons, and leaving them hospitalized just because they don't like the politics of the nationalists. And this is the way that I see them. They're like street gangs that have been given a pass by the government to do whatever they want to do, and they feel that they should be entitled to do whatever they want to do, because it's Nazis they are attacking. They justify it that it's Nazis who would want to protect Nazis. They have no idea what our actual policies are, no idea what our actual ideology is. They just know that we're Nazis, so they want to attack us. Do you think, Max, that we should draw a distinction between the extreme left and just the normal left, you know, the Labour Party left? Do you think we should draw a distinction between the two, or because, you know, the Labour Party do support these groups, and as you say, in Hope Not Hate and Unite Against Fascism, they support and applaud these extreme groups. Do you think we should call them all just the left, or do you think we should draw a distinction between the extreme left and just the normal average left?
I think there's a need for some discretion in terms of how we view them. And what I tried to describe a bit earlier on is how there are these sort of concentric circles where in the bullseye of the concentric circle, so to speak, you've got the ruthlessly violent anti-fascist organizations. And when you go to their websites, it's screamingly obvious that what they're doing is organizing physical attacks and violent physical attacks against people who otherwise would be quite peaceful. There was an anecdote that I read on one of these anti-fascist websites just the other day, and it referred to a recent demonstration that there'd been in London, where there was an anti-Brexit march, a number of nationalist activists walked alongside the anti-Brexit March, and they were counter-demonstrating. They were making counter, shouting counter slogans to the slogans that were being shouted by the Brexit people. And a number of anti-fascist activists were aroused by this. And during the course of the day, this demonstration went off. The police were there, keeping the two sides apart. So there was no scope really for any violence to take place. And at the end of the day, the anti-Brexit marchers had all gone home. And they would be people who primarily would be people from the left, I would imagine. And the people who, the small group of nationalists who had conducted the counter demonstration, all in good heart, had gone to a local pub to have a little bit of a social before they went home. And within this anecdote that was that I read, the anti-fascist group then lay in wait for the nationalists, and as they described it, as the slightly drunk nationalists wandered off home, you know, one or two at a time, they were then set upon by anti-fascist gangs who brutally beat them. And in this description that that I read, they relished the fact that these people probably had to go off to hospital afterwards for hospital treatment as a result of the beatings that they received. And so this is a description on an anti-fascist website of where they deliberately waited until people who had peacefully demonstrated had relaxed and felt that the danger of the moment had passed, and then in gangs they set upon individuals and beat them very severely. And you know, that is terrorism. You know, that is the kind of terrorism that the police ought to be very concerned about, because in the long term, if that kind of terrorism continues and it's never ever dealt with by the police, then the police can't be surprised if occasionally there are acts of violence that go the other way, where somebody who's received one of these severe beatings decides that they've had enough and decides to fight fire with fire. And I wouldn't want to see a situation where there are armed gangs fighting on either side in the streets. I think that would be a deplorable situation. And I know that as far as the vast majority of people who are active nationalists are concerned, that they've got no desire for violence of any sort whatsoever. But there is this group within the left who the police often appear to turn a blind eye to, and as we said earlier on, who have a kind of cheer group who cheer them on, who don't necessarily get involved in the violence themselves, but who provide the moral justification for what took place and to make reference to it, and who look the other way and yet secretly enjoy the fact that nationalists get beaten. And so there is a degree of guilt on the part of the left as a whole, because they are prepared to tolerate a situation in which a group of violent extremists are able to vent their violence upon nationalists, and they don't do anything about it. And yet when there is some kind of stupid act of violence, such as the attack on Joe Cox, those same people are jumping up and down and demanding that the government does something in order to curb the activities of organisations that have got really no connection with the violence whatsoever, in the way that, in reality, although National Action were, you know, gave the government the opportunity to designate them as a terrorist organisation and shut them down, As an organisation, National Action didn't actually condone what Thomas Mayer had done. There were just one or two foolish individuals within that group who should never have been left in charge of a Twitter account, because they couldn't be trusted to behave responsibly in terms of the things that, and the messages that they tweeted. But certainly there is a need for government If our government wants to be seen as even-handed, if our government wants to combat extremism, then there is a need for the government to ensure that the police even-handedly enforce legislation in those three areas that I described. Legislation where there is malicious communication, legislation to counter malicious communication, legislation to prevent unfair discrimination, and legislation to prevent acts of terrorism. And with respect to legislation to prevent unfair discrimination, it's well known within nationalist circles that individual nationalists can, just because it becomes known that they are a nationalist, whether they have ever been within 100 miles of any kind of violence or anything of that sort, just because somebody becomes known as a nationalist, their employers are in many cases enabled by our establishment to sack that person and deprive them of their livelihood. And we have numerous examples of people who get exposed as a nationalist in the pages of of organs like Hope Not Hate and Searchlight, who subsequently get sacked, and when they appeal on the basis that they shouldn't be discriminated against on the basis of their political beliefs. I mean, that is one of the tenets of the European European
Court
human
rights
legislation, and it is a human right that people should be able to within the European Union, that people should be able to live their lives free from persecution and discrimination based upon their political beliefs, and yet that is what happens in this country, because the legislation in these areas is one-sidedly enforced. It's always enforced against the indigenous people and always enforced against nationalists, and it's always enforced in favour of the left and in favour of immigrants and ethnic minority groups.
Well, it's a part of the human condition that we have to be able to say what we see and hear around us. We have to be able to speak the truth of the situation, of what we see and hear. There's a verse from the Bible that says that, and I do wonder if that could even be used in court, because all law is supposed to go back to the common law and the law of the Bible, and that's part of it. One of the apostles states that in the trial, that he has to speak what he sees and hears. So that is an accepted part of the human condition, and part of what the human rights are based upon, the original laws. But just thinking about the violence that they indulge in, and there must be, there's no call for violence on the right in nationalist groups, are there? There's no calls to go out, there's nobody that goes out to a leftist demonstration to go and pick off the people when they're walking home. There's nobody lying in wait to ambush them and hospitalise them. None of that goes on. There's no calls for any violence whatsoever. On the right, you might see smash cultural Marxism, but that's talking about political correctness. It's not talking about smashing actual people like the leftists do, smash the fash. They are calling for violence against people. Now, I wonder, how is it that they justify this to themselves? Now, I've been thinking about this for a while, and I know that they have a great love for the immigrants, and I think the way they justify this is they say, well, these immigrants are frightened that they're going to be turfed out and kicked out, violently kicked out from the country. So you nationalists, you deserve to be living in fear as well. But none of us are saying that immigrants should be violently removed and kicked out of the country. You know, we suggest that they should be enticed to leave the country, you know, by saying you can go back to Syria, we'll give you $2,000 to set up a business, or we'll offer you encouragement to go back to Africa. And we're saying that people that come over here should not be entitled to the free NHS, free education, all the things that our ancestors put in place for us and paid for. There should be no need for violent fear of violence from immigrants, from nationalists. We just want them to peacefully go back to their own land, and whatever encouragement encouragement we can do to do that. That's what we advocate for. You know, there might be jokes about right-wing death squads, but we're not calling for them all to be turfed out and you know, we call for the politicians to be tried and hanged, but the immigrants should be given all the encouragement possible to go home. You know, that's the way I look at it. So I cannot see, you know, I just want, in case there are leftists that listen to this, there is no violence intended towards immigrants. We just want them to go home.
That's right. And I think that in all seriousness, there is no intention on the part of most nationalist organisations to even deal with politicians as severely as you sort of kind of implied just then, to be quite honest. I think that it is just a matter that what we want is for our country to be returned to our control, effectively. I mean, what we have in Britain today, and this again sort of comes back to the three areas of legislation that I've described before, where the legislation is implemented just one way against the indigenous British people and in favour of immigrants and ethnic minorities. And that's with regard to advocacy and representation. If we look at virtually any ethnic minority group within this country, they almost always have some kind of a representative body that can make representations to them, or can make representations to the government on their behalf to argue in their ethnic interests, and the government are prepared to meet with these representative bodies and take notice of what they say and speak gushingly about the good work that these organisations do. But that same thing isn't accorded to the Indigenous British people. It's always assumed by people that our government is the organisation that we can trust to advocate on our behalf and on behalf of the Indigenous people. But in reality, that's not the case. Once you're living within a multiracial society and a multicultural society, the government that's created the multicultural society and which pledges equal allegiance to all of the various ethnic and minority groups that exist within that country, that government is then, from that point onwards, at the very best, a neutral arbiter. It's not an organisation that advocates in the ethnic interests of the indigenous people any longer. So what we have in this country is every other ethnic group, apart from the indigenous British people, has an advocacy body which is recognised and that has the ability to interact with government, but we don't. And whenever any organisation is formed, any nationalist organisation is formed to advocate on behalf of and in the ethnic interests of the indigenous British people, it is always rudely condemned as racist, and the government refused to have any interaction with it, and that's most regrettable. And that's again one of the things that's got to be changed. If Theresa May and her government want to be seen as dealing even-handedly with all of the various ethnic groups in this country, and wants to prevent there from being jealousy and resentment on the part of the Indigenous British people, then what she's got to do is she's got to allow the Indigenous British people to have their own organisations advocating in their own ethnic interests, same as every other ethnic group has. And that's something that we have to keep pushing for, and something that we've got to campaign for relentlessly as a first step. Only once there is as a first step that we are able to advocate in our own ethnic interests can we then even think about, you know, returning the country to the situation that existed beforehand. And yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you that as far as the immigrant populations of Britain are concerned, it is in their interests ultimately for them to return to their homelands, just as it's in our interests for them to do that. And I think that if we were allowed to advocate on behalf of our people, if we were allowed to put forward the arguments that we have that demonstrate that that is the case, then lots of the immigrant communities would actually realise that we're right in that respect. And if we are able to gain greater influence in society in the future, then it would create a situation in which there is no need for there to be ill feeling. And I think that as far as immigrants are concerned, then they could quite happily contemplate a Britain in which perhaps the government might be formed by nationalists, because it wouldn't be, as I say, our aim to deal with them violently. It would be our aim to explain to them how and why they will be better off returning to their own land of ethnic origin, and we would arrange for that to happen in a very peaceful and orderly fashion.
It's no violence required. Again, the violence is all on the left. It all seems to come from there. You don't hear it from the right. These groups, these advocacy groups, the ethnic minority advocacy groups, they all get funded by the government as well. They all get money for them to operate, whereas we just get condemned and they try to silence what we have to say. Well, what do you think we can do about this leftist violence and about getting the extreme left groups prescribed by the government then? What do you suggest, writing to an MP or getting a petition together or something like that? Or what can people do, Max?
I think people initially, well, I think all of those things can be done. I think that we've got to present our case and persistently present our case, because I think anybody who is objective in viewing what's taking place cannot possibly do other than come to the conclusion that there is this constant low-grade terrorism which is to which people on the right are subject, and if people have a desire for our society to remain civilized and orderly, then police action is required. You know, the legislation exists. All it requires is for the police to actually enforce the legislation even-handedly, and not to continually, as I say, turn a blind eye and allow the extreme left to get away with it. I think that what the nationalist movement needs to do as a body of people is to begin making representations to the Home Office and also to the Prime Minister, campaigning for the establishment by us, not the appointment by the government, but the establishment by us of an advocacy group that can speak to her on behalf of the Indigenous British people, as representatives of the Indigenous British people only, in the same way that Jews have got the Board of Deputies and other ethnic groups have got their own representative councils. We should have a representative council that represents only us and that advocates in our interests only, so that we have an equal say and we've got the ear of the government in the same way that those ethnic minority groups have got the ear of the government. Until government start to recognise that there is a legitimate reason why the Indigenous British people should want their own advocates, and until they realise why and accept that there is a legitimate case for us to have our own advocates, then we will continue to be discriminated against, and we've got to just continually campaign for that. In fact, I've started thinking with a view to formulating a strategy as to how we can actually lobby government to that end over the foreseeable future. And I think that if nationalist organisations can follow another lead that I'm trying to give, which is to start to act in a more united way, to create a united front, and if we certainly can stop squabbling amongst ourselves about what's the best way forward, and present a united front to the government and ask for the establishment of a group advocating on behalf of our people, then there is a high likelihood that we'll be able to get something of that sort. And then once that's established, as the largest ethnic group in the country, it's logical that we should, that our voice should be taken very, very seriously by the government.
Well, that would be very hard for them to argue against, wouldn't it? When you put it in that language, it's very, very hard for them to argue against. I think the only way they've really sort of argued against that before is to say that the British people aren't indigenous, or the English, Welsh and Scottish aren't really an ethnicity. So I think we have to first prove that we're an ethnicity, and then we can advocate for that. I've been very pleased with this interview, Max. I'm sure the listeners are going to enjoy it. There's a lot of food for thought there. We should probably end now. I don't know if you've got anything you'd just like to add there at the end, or shall we finish here?
I think we can finish here. I think I've said really all that I was intending to say on the subject. And what I'd like to do is just to thank you once again for giving me the opportunity to speak to your listeners. To tell them that they can read what Western Spring has to say on our website, which is www.westernspring.co.uk, and they can also see what Legion and the Legion camps, what's happening with regard to the Legion camps, by tuning into www.legionmac.org. And on that website, they can, if they decide that they'd like to attend one of our camps, that there is a payment button on the website which enables them to register and make payment for the next camp that's coming up, and there is one in about 2 months' time. So what I would say is that any young nationalists that that feel they'd like to become more active and feel that the kind of activities that I've described would be of interest to them, and that they would like to learn more about how they can defend themselves against attack, then I would heartily recommend the Legion camps. And for people who are primarily interested in the politics of the situation and in developing a more united nationalist movement in this country, then we at Western Spring, I believe, are playing a leading role in that respect. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you for coming on, Max. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Do go and check out the Western Spring site, and do get along to those camps if you're the right age for them. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again in the future for more Aryan Insights.
Tuned in to Radio Aryan.